Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, I'm Henry Will. Welcome to episode 14 of the PMLessonsLearned.com podcast. In this episode, we will hear the PMLessonsLearned.com PMP Exam Study Group conference call from June 7th, 2007. The study group topic was Risk Management, presented by David Radkovich, PMP. David provided some supporting slides which can be found in the Files section of our Yahoo group site. Free membership is required to access these files. Follow the links to the Yahoo group from our homepage at pmlessonslearned.com. I highly recommend that you join the free Yahoo group in order to get announcements of our calls and other information to further your project management career. Now, let's listen into the conference call.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the June 7th, 2005 pmlessonslearned.com PMP Study Group conference call. This is Henry Will, and I want to welcome you all for joining us with our call this evening, with David Radkovich being the host of this call. I just want to mention that if anybody would like to be a part of our group, we'd love to have you. It's a free group to join. Go to our website, pmlessonslearned.com. On the website, you'll see a link to our Yahoo group. I encourage you to join because a new feature that we've just added for all of our group members is that twice a month we're going to be having a project management tidbit, which is some information about project management that you can share with other project managers you know and use it in your own project management work. It's going to be shared with us by Jim Blalock, and for those of you that are in the Yahoo group already, you've seen that we've already sent out two of those tidbits. And I encourage you all to join our Yahoo group so that you can get that valuable project management information and other project management information along with reminders for our conference calls. So please join to enhance your career. I also wanted to mention that, of course, David Radkovich is somebody that he believes in giving back. You know, he's led these calls now, and I want to mention that I think it would be very helpful to David if some of you might consider giving a presentation on one of these calls. One of the best ways that you can learn how to study for the PMP exam is to do a presentation on one of our calls. You can pick a topic and talk to David Radkovich about it, and when you confer on a topic, you'll be able to present that on one of our calls. He can go through the drafts of your presentation materials, and when you get that all put together, you can present on one of our calls. And think about the value that you'll get from learning the topic thoroughly enough to present it, and not only that, you'll be helping other people out in the process that are studying for the exam just like you. So I'd encourage you to think about that. And I want to introduce David Radkovich. He's a person that is truly very generous in his life. David has an experience going back for several years in project management. He owned his own retail business several years ago and got back into project management recently. He was involved in working in Singapore, rolling out computers to a very big audience where it involved even getting them into, I would say, environmentally difficult places where the environment was such that he had to travel on back roads. He had people traveling on back roads and that kind of thing in very tough environments for computers. So, you know, he's a man that knows how to put a project plan together and execute it. So, David Radkovich, of course, passed his PMP exam earlier this year, and David was the one that started a local PMP exam study group at a library. I asked him if he would be interested in doing this as a conference call, and even though he's passed the PMP exam, he still continues to give and help people out that are studying for the exam. So, David, I'm really happy that you're part of the PMLessonsLearned.com group. And thank you very much for this call. And with that, David, take it away.
Well, thank you, Henry. I appreciate that good introduction. Right started into the presentation talking about our agenda. What I'm doing, for those that haven't downloaded the presentation, it is available on the Yahoo group. Highly recommend you do that. I'll try to talk about what's on the screen, and so those that might not have it will be able to follow through, I hope. So right now I'm looking at the agenda screen, and basically we're going to do a basic introduction to risk. We're going to talk about the six risk processes, and throughout the presentation I'll talk about some helpful hints, at the end we'll talk about some websites and that to go to. I am trying to follow the PMBOK closely, because this is a PMP study presentation, so we're not delving too much into the how, but we're really going into the what, which is what the PMBOK is all about. Welcome input, and anytime anybody wants to ask a question, please jump in. We do ask that if you get in, announce yourself, give me a second to acknowledge you, and that way we won't be stepping over each other. So with that, I'm going to get started, and I'm going to go to the first slide, which is what is project risk management. The goal of project risk management is to minimize potential risk while we maximize potential opportunities. This is kind of a change with the new edition of PMBOK, where they're recognizing both negative risk and positive risk. So you have to know how to deal with both types of risk with the new PMBOK. So there are six risk management processes, and this is one area where I really suggest that you understand the process flow through these six processes. They are done in order, pretty much. It's, as all processes in the PMBOK, you do go back through them frequently, but they are kind of done in order, and I think it's important to know this order. I think it really helps on the test if you know the risk order of the processes. So the very first one is risk management planning, and that's basically just deciding how to approach and plan the risk management activities for the project. We're going to go in each one of these a little bit more detail through the presentation. The next one is risk identification, determining what the risks are and their likely effect on the project. We have qualitative risk analysis, which is basically putting a impact and a probability measurement to the risk. And then we have quantitative risk analysis, which is delving more deeply into the risk. From quantitative risk, you're going to come up with a risk score, and then for those risks that you think deserve more detailed analysis, you're going to jump into quantitative risk analysis. And after we get done with that, we're going to do risk planning. You know, what are we going to do about the risk? How do we enhance the opportunities? How do we reduce the threats or negative risk? And then after we get our plan in place, we're going to do risk monitoring control. The important thing I think to remember about risk monitoring control is that the risks are ever-changing. There's going to be new risks coming in. The level of risk that we have on some of our risks is going to change, so they may drop out of our risk management plan if it's reduced enough. So constant evaluation of the risk and their impact and probability. Do we have any questions at this point? With that, I'll move on to the next slide, risk management planning. The main output of risk management planning is a risk management plan, and that basically is going to tell the project team how we're going to handle risk. We need to understand the organization and sponsor's approach to risk, the key stakeholders. You know, are they risk adverse? Do they not want to have hardly any risk on the project? Therefore, we have to come up with plans for the risk. Are they, you know, risk takers? You know, do they willingly accept risk? So we really need to understand how the organization treats risk and how our sponsors and key stakeholders treat risk. And the level of detail with the risk management plan is going to vary from project to project. You know, one of the key points in studying and taking the PMP test, I feel, is keep in mind that they're going to assume a large project, but as we know, you know, not all projects are large, so the level of detail you have to have in your risk management plan really depends on the needs of the project. Risk identification is a process of understanding what potential outcomes can affect the project, both on a negative and positive point of view. There's several risk identification tools, and we're going to discuss a few of them. There's brainstorming, the Delphi technique, interviewing, and strength, weakness, opportunity, and threat analysis. I don't have a slide on brainstorming. I think that's kind of obvious. It's, you know, meeting together in a meeting, kickoff meeting perhaps, and getting each person in the room to identify some risks and just basically, you know, open brainstorming and discussion. Hopefully most of you project managers are familiar with brainstorming techniques. I do have a slide on the Delphi technique because I think that's an area that we need to explore, especially with the changing environment with project management. I think that emailing, the web, really opens up a lot of opportunities for the Delphi technique, and I think you'll see it even become more popular. Interviewing is, you know, talking with the stakeholders, you know, getting their feel for what concerns they have for the project and identifying risk that way. And I do have a slide on SWOT as well. So any questions? Okay. The Delphi technique. The purpose of the Delphi technique is to let people contribute in a closed format where it's not open, so people don't have to be worried about sounding silly or uneducated about a risk. You know, they can openly share information. Usually this is done by email nowadays. So what you basically do is you have the group send emails to you, and you compile all the information as a project manager. You come up with the result, and then you send that result out to the group, but nobody knows where individual contributions came in. If you look at the bottom right-hand screen on the screen, I do have a link there. If you want more information about the Delphi technique, you can do it. But it basically allows people to capitalize on America's group problem solving, and but limit the liabilities with people being concerned about their viewpoints there. In government work, if anybody's involved in there, there's the Department of Defense has a Department Acquisition University, and they actually have a facility for meetings there, and their computers are actually set up where people can anonymously ask questions or make comments during the presentation, and it actually shows up on the screen, but it's anonymous, and nobody knows where it's coming from. That's an example of using the Delphi technique. Just give me a second. I had an error message pop up on my screen here. Okay, the strengths, weakness, opportunities, and threats. What you're going to do is you're going to look at a risk from these standpoints. You know, what are the strengths, the attributes that the organization is going to be helpful to achieving the objective. So some risk could be positive. They're going to have a lot of strength and give value to the organization. What are the weaknesses? You know, what's going to be harmful to meeting our objective? Opportunities, external conditions that are helpful to achieving the objective. And threats are external conditions that are harmful to achieving the objective. And again, I got this definition out of the Wikipedia, and I have a link there, so you'll be able to go to that as well. I have the next slide shows an example of a fishbone diagram. Fishbone diagram is known by a couple names: Ishikawa diagram, a fishbone diagram, or cause and effect diagram. I think it's important for the test to know all those. And the reason it's called fishbone, if you see the example on the screen, you see it looks like the backbone of a fish. You have the spine that's kind of pointing to the risk or the event that you feel might be a problem. And then from the spine, you have lines that represent different areas. In this example, they're showing location, management, marketplace, and benefits. These are all different things that can affect the example here that they're giving, which is high employee turnover. And then out of each one of those bones, you have smaller bones that actually represent some of the risks. In this case, you know, location, maybe it's in a remote location, small rural town, maybe it's hard to drive to, a lot of traffic, management, maybe management's not flexible, they're not focused enough on retention. So what you're doing here is you're putting the causes in here, and the ultimate thing here is the effect. So you're trying to judge, you know, how the causes, how much impact they're having on the effect. This is good use for risk because you can put the risk down here. You can try to get down to the root causes of the risk and then decide how much each one of those causes is contributing to the risk factor. Do we have any questions there?
David, this is Henry.
Yes.
Yes, David, I was going to say, I think you need to leave a little bit more time for questions. I was trying to jump in with a question before, and it takes a little while to unmute the phone with a pushing six. But one thing that I want to mention is that, you know, your point about root cause analysis or root risk analysis is very important. I've heard a presentation on that before, that when you identify a risk, it's important to continue to keep asking the question, you know, why would that happen or what would cause this to occur, and to continue to keep asking that question. If I remember correctly, the presentation that I listened to said that you should ask that about between 4 and 6 times, get to the actual root cause in order to find what the root cause is for that risk. Another thing that I wanted to mention, too, that I forgot to mention on the introduction, David, is that if somebody does want to speak, if you have a speakerphone, if you pick up the handset, it would be a lot easier for us to hear you. And I wanted to mention, too, David, that if folks would like to, and I'm sorry I'm interrupting you here, but I forgot to mention this in the intro, we do have another conference call, our Lessons Learned conference call, in 2 weeks on the fourth Thursday, and this month's topic for that conference call will be about managing virtual teams. There's a lot of risk involved in that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Henry. Those were good comments. It's actually funny that you mentioned the why question, because I actually went to a presentation this morning, and the presenter brought up that exact point, and they mentioned 5 times you should ask that question. And she started mentioning about how she actually gave, a really good example of her daughter. You know, a 6-year-old daughter is in that phase where she asks why for everything, and it's like, I need to go to the store. Why? Well, I need to get laundry detergent. Why? Well, I need to wash your clothes. Why? Well, your clothes are dirty because you wear the same outfit every day. Why? And then, you know, she actually said it made me think, well, do your friends really care that your clothes are that dirty? Do I need to wash every day or not? So she said it actually got her thinking about root cause and what was the real reason. Did she really need to go to the store? So I thought that was a...
That's a very good story. You're right. Children know how to ask that question why many times over.
Any other questions? Okay, with that, I'm going to the next slide. Is that a question? No. All right. The next slide I have here is actually a sample of a risk register. I'm not now here because as we're identifying risks, we do need a place to record them. The risk register is probably used on all the processes. You're going to update the risk register as you go through each one of the processes. And this is one example I have. It covers a lot of areas, and I think it's very good. And just to go through what the example looks like is if you have an event number, you can call it a risk number if you'd like. It has a definition of what the risk is. It has an impact to the project. It has a trigger, and hopefully everybody understands what a trigger is. It's the event or symptom that's going to cause the risk to occur. I think that's actually probably a good definition to understand for the test. I'm not sure if I had a question on it, but I know through some of the practice testing that I might have had a question on it. So, it identifies who's responsible for the risk. It's going to talk about the probability of occurrence and the impact, and we're going to give some samples and examples of those as we talk about qualitative risk analysis. And then finally, it's going to give a risk score. It's going to talk about the effects of the what area of the project is affected by that particular risk. And then they've mentioned two, you know, activities here, a proactive response to the risk. You know, what can you do to mitigate the risk, avoid it, accept it, transfer it? And then there's a reactive response. So maybe you don't do a proactive response. Maybe you accept the risk. And then what happens if that risk occurs? What are you going to do? So, again, this is just one sample I pulled. I did put a copy of this example up on the Yahoo group as well. And as we discuss things further, I'll tell you a couple things I think is missing from this example. So, any questions?
Yes, David. It's Annette here. The proactive response strategy, is that what is called mitigation in other documents?
As we look later on, we're going to talk about the different strategies, but there's actually four strategies: avoidance, acceptance, transference, and mitigation.
Oh, I see.
So,
thank you.
You know, one of those are you following, and you know, how are you doing that? I hope that answered the question. Do we have any other questions? Okay, moving on. So, as I say, we're going through the process steps. If you noticed on the first screen, I didn't mention, but I did color code the headings so that if you see a heading that's in this case green, it's part of the quantitative risk analysis section. So, you know, we've gone through the first couple of steps, and now we're actually trying, we've identified the risk. Now we're trying to understand what the impact and likelihood of occurrence, you know, the probability of occurrence for that risk. There's a couple tools we can use to help qualify it at this point, and that is a probability and impact matrix, which I have some examples on. You can learn to track the top 10 risks as an example. And, you know, most probably the most important tool here is the expert judgment. You probably have a lot of good qualified people on your team and that can really help analyze the risk at this point and help you get, you know, and understand the probability and impact. With that, going to the next slide, I give an example of how some of the ways you could rate a risk, perhaps. You can rate it from very low to very high, and you can give it a score. And very low means it's highly unlikely to occur, as an example. Low is likely to occur. Medium, likely to occur. Sure, but we still want to evaluate it some stronger. And then high, very likely to occur, and very high, it's almost definitely to occur. So this is an example, again, used only for example. It shows you what the possible score is, and with that, we'll move to the next slide, which is going to show the impact rating. So you're going to use a very similar type of description, and this is what would be in your risk management plan. This is where you would identify that this is how we're going to rate our probability and impact. So when we talk about the risk management plan, as you're moving through, you're going to constantly be updating your risk management plan as well. So examples for rating impact, again, very low to very high, and I think it's kind of obvious where we're going at is, you know, very low, very insignificant, all the way up to very high, which would be a major impact on the project. And in this particular example, they actually give, you know, 5%, you know, for low, 5% deviation, medium, 5 to 10%, and so on. So this is another, you know, sample, and I'm giving this sample because I think it helps really understand what qualitative risk is doing for us. So we take our probability and our impact, and here we're going to come up with a risk score. So, you know, I gave an example of five risks here, you know, that have different probabilities of occurrence and the impact on occurrence. So probability, okay, is 60% probability that it will occur, but its impact is only 20%. So it's total risk score. We multiply the probability by the impact, and we come up with a 0.12. And we do that for all our risks, So we're basically here is assigning a risk score to the risk so we can now try to use some judgment what we do with the risk. And that's what the next slide is showing. That's our probability and impact matrix. There's samples in the PMBOK as well. This flows very nicely with it, but I'm trying to relate it to the previous examples here. So you can see here that, you know, risks that are rated anything above 0.60 as an example in this matrix, we're going to consider that a red risk and treat it a certain way, and we're going to show that in the next slide. And then anywhere from blue, which is very, very low risk, all the way up to red. And if we jump to the next slide, we can see what our response is going to be. So if it's a high risk, if it's a color red, it's rating, as an example, you know, 0.6 or above the score. Our action is that we're going to add it to our risk register. We're going to perform quantitative risk analysis, which is the next process. And we do expect to try to mitigate that risk, to try to reduce that risk. We don't want to have any high risk out there. So what actions can we take to reduce that risk? Once again, this is the type of thing that would be in your risk management plan. You know, how do you respond to these different risk ratings? So medium risk, we'd add it to our risk register. We'd perform quantitative risk analysis, but we'd probably wait till after that to decide do we need to mitigate or try to reduce it. Low risk, we're going to add it to the risk register, and from then on, we're just going to monitor it. We're not going to do quantitative risk analysis. We don't think it's rating high enough to, you know, spend that time to do it. But we're going to closely monitor it to change. Maybe it's going to, you know, increase from a low risk to a medium risk. And then our very low risk, things that are, you know, in that color area of blue, we're not going to take any action. So this would be a good point for any questions. We have some questions out there.
Hi, this is Jeff. Question about the qualitative very high impact of a 1.0 score. If you have a situation where if something occurs that could, you know, stop the project in its tracks, do you develop a risk response plan for something like that, no matter what its probability is?
Again, for it to get to a 1.0 rating, it would have to both have a high impact and a high probability. So, you know, that combination, because the impact could be so great and the probability is so great, I would say, yes, you do want a, you know, risk response, and that's why in that slide where I say what are our response to, I do expect to try to mitigate that risk. I do expect some, you know, action to be taken, not just identifying it, but take action. And part of that answer, when we talk about quantitative, the next phase, quantitative risk analysis, is that's going to identify more what we can do with that risk and how we can develop that plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Another question? Okay. Well, I'll move on. I'm doing a good job explaining, or we just got a quiet group. So the next process is quantitative risk analysis. It often follows qualitative risk, like I said, because you may decide that, you know, judging by the risk rating, you need to do more analysis. It's generally, qualitative is generally done on really large complex projects with leading edge technology that requires extensive risk analysis. And there's a couple of main techniques. One is decision tree analysis, and one is simulation. So we know that this is a high impact risk, perhaps, and we want to see, okay, what is, you know, more detailed impact at it, and try to, you know, come up with some more information about that risk, how much it can affect us. The decision tree, also known as expected monetary value, it's a diagramming technique used to help you select the best course of action in situations for future outcomes that are uncertain. ENV is a type of decision tree to calculate the expected monetary value of one decision, and you compare that to the expected monetary value of another decision. They do give an example in the PMBOK. I personally find the example in the PMBOK kind of confusing, So I'm going to present a little bit more, what I think is a little bit better example. And with this example, I know the screen's a little busy, but I tried to get a lot of information on here. And what it's basically showing here is that we have a decision to make. This is showing, it's funny, this is showing project one, project two in this example, but this could easily be risk, you know, decision could be the risk, and project one and project two could be ways to mitigate the risk. And what you're going to look at here is, you know, the probability of the risk occurring and perhaps the outcome if the risk occurs. And there might, in some situations, there might be positive amounts because it's an opportunity and negative amounts because it's a threat. And you can have both types of things. You know, a particular risk, you know, could have both positive and negative effects. At the same time, it could have more than one negative effect. So as example number two there shows. So what you're going to basically do here is you're going to multiply the probability times the outcome, and you're going to get an EMV value. And then for that total risk, you're going to add those values together. So as an example, the example there, they're showing project one, the value is 28,000. Project two, the value is positive 30,000. So naturally, you select project two, or in, like I said, trying to relate it to risk two here. Does this help clear it up a little bit better than what was in the PMBOK? Any thoughts? Did that example in the PMBOK confuse anybody else or just me?
David, just it's Annette here. Just to be clear here, so the expected monetary value is a tool for choosing between two risky projects rather than a tool for determining or handling risk within a project. Is that correct?
Correct. This example is showing that, yes, but it can also be used to determine what your risk response might be. So as an example, to mitigate a risk, by performing a certain task may reduce the risk by 20%. And judging by the cost to reduce it, you want to kind of add those together to decide is it worth performing that. So if the probability occurrence of a risk is 20,000, its impact is 300,000. Equals 60,000 to reduce that risk or to eliminate that risk. If you're going to spend 40,000, you would say that might be a good investment. Do you understand what I'm saying there?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
This example is not the best, but like I said, I didn't really like the example in the PMBOK either, so I tried to find something. I did have a couple of questions like this on the exam. I did have a couple. It more evolved around projects. Which project you would select more. I don't know if this is in another place of the PMBOK, but I did remember a couple questions on the exam about this, and it was more, you know, what project would you choose over another project? But you definitely have to know, you know, to multiply the probability by the outcome and come up with the EMV value. And once again, I'll use that. I had mentioned earlier that on the risk register, I thought there was a couple things missing on that particular example I gave, and this is one of the things that I think is missing. You want to evaluate the risk, you know, probability, what its impact is monetarily, and come up with a value amount there. And one way that could be useful is if you're trying to figure out how much contingency funds you might need for a project. You multiply all the risk probabilities by their possible impact in a monetary point of view, not just a percentage point of view. And as you multiply that out, you come up with an EMV figure, and then you add it all up, and maybe you need $200,000 in a contingency fund in case some of those risks occur. That's one area way it could be used. And again, you can also look at that from the standpoint, okay, if it costs me this much to eliminate the risk is going to cost me more to try to eliminate the risk than the impact the risk might have on the facility. Okay? Any questions? Okay. With that, I'll move on to simulation. This is another qualitative risk analysis tool, and it's really used to, you know, model some analysis. The Monte Carlo analysis is one of the most popular tools, and it basically is going to provide a statistical distribution of calculated results. To use the Monte Carlo, you need to have, you know, usually, you know, three estimates. This is for scheduling, so scheduling is the risk. If you want to determine, well, what's my risk of this task, you know, completing on time? You know, if it's on a critical path and you're worried that you're not going to complete this particular task on time, you can use Monte Carlo simulation to try to get a better feel for what's the actual scenario, and you might even, you know, be able to use it to do some simulations. And that's usually done with software. Okay? Any questions? Okay. So next I'd like to talk about strategies for dealing with risk. As we mentioned earlier, there's a couple strategies for dealing with risk, and it's a negative risk. In this slide, I'm looking at what to do with negative risk or threats. And one thing you can do is avoid the risk. You could try to eliminate or isolate completely from the project. Again, there might be a cost factor associated with that. You'd want to look at, is it worth trying to eliminate that risk? As we mentioned earlier, the culture of your organization or your stakeholders, sponsor, may affect which strategy you use here. If they're very opposed to risk, if they don't like risk, if it makes them very, very nervous, you know, any chance that you have to avoid risk, you may want to, you know, emphasize that. However, if they're risk takers, you may, you know, lean more for acceptance there. Transfer means you're shifting the risk to a third party. I think one key thing to remember here is by shifting it to a third party, it doesn't eliminate the risk. So an example of shifting it to a third party would be buying insurance. If you're dealing with international projects and you have monetary issues with maybe the exchange rate, you might, I forget the term, what it's called when you buy cash, basically, or you set a certain exchange rate ahead. You know, that there's an amount of money you have to spend to do that, but that might be worth the risk of doing that. And then what you're doing there is transferring the risk. It could still occur, but you've isolated yourself from that. The third step is mitigated risk. What can you do to reduce the probability or impact on the risk? So, again, you might want to look at cost and how it affects the risk and what funds you might be able to do. Maybe you can take a really high priority risk that has an impact of $500,000, maybe you can spend $20,000 and reduce the impact from an 80% down to 40%, something like that. So that's what you're going to do to mitigate. And then you can always just accept the risk. There's actually two ways to accept it. You can just not, you know, you can recognize that it's there and just not take any action to deal with it. That's called passive acceptance. Active acceptance means that you're going to, You're not going to take action against the risk. You're going to accept it, but you're going to have a contingency fund in place in case the risk occurs. So that's the difference I've gotten out of the PMBOK between passive and active. And then we'll talk a little bit about strategies for dealing with risk. For positive risk or opportunities, we can exploit the risk. You know, make sure that the opportunity happens. If it's a positive risk and, you know, we can spend some money perhaps and make sure that it happens, then it might be worth spending that money. Just like we can transfer the risk, we can share the risk if it's positive. A joint venture perhaps is an example of that. We think by, you know, merging our skills together with each other will add some positive benefits. We create a good project. It means we're sharing the risk with a third party. In this case, we think it's a positive thing. And then we can enhance the rescue. You know, just like mitigate tries to reduce it, enhance means we're trying to increase the probability or impact of the risk by maximizing the key drivers there. And just like negative risk, we can accept the risk as well. Okay, do we have any questions on dealing with risk? One other note here, I don't have a slide on it, but I do want to talk about, you know, as you mitigate risk, as you take steps to reduce risk, there could still be residual risks or can create new risks by doing this. So you have to be very, very conscious. Again, it's a iterative process where we're constantly tracking it, adding the new risk. So by dealing with one risk, we may create a risk somewhere else, or there still may be part of the risk left. Okay. Anybody want to jump in? Okay, and then the last process is risk monitoring control. We monitor the risk naturally. We're looking at the risk register. We're updating it. I would highly recommend, as we mentioned in the risk register, you have somebody in charge of that risk, and he's responsible for it. He's responsible for giving you your updates to the risk and keeping a close tab on that risk. So controlling risk involves carrying out risk management plans. If the risk occurs or we want to reduce the risk, workarounds are on-plan responses to risk events that must be done when there are no contingency. I think there was a question on the exam about workarounds. I think the key there is that workarounds are responses to unplanned events. So I think that was one of the key points to remember for the test. You know, something happens, you didn't plan for it, well, this is how I'm going to work around it. The main outputs of risk monitor are control for our corrective actions. So we're going to create corrective actions if the risk occurs. You know, what are we going to do about it? Actually, we're going to take project change requests or updates to any of our other project management plans. From a controlling standpoint, risk control involves executing your risk management processes, the risk management plan, and the risk management plan to respond to risk events. And they must be monitored based on defined milestones or decisions. The trigger, you want to watch for the trigger. You know, what are you should have already made your decision on what your response is going to be, what your strategy is going to be. And once again, I mentioned the workarounds for on-plan responses, for on-plan risk. All right, any questions? I actually think I'm going through this faster than expected. Some hints for the exam, as I mentioned earlier, know the order of the processes that you're to be performed. So the six processes, know them in order, because that's pretty much how you're going to follow the processes in real life. Know how to use EVM to decide on a project or on a risk. Don't confuse EMV with EVM. I think I might have just said it wrong, actually. EVM is earned value management. Don't confuse EMV, the term there. So try to make sure you see that straight if you see a question on the exam, that you don't mix those two terms up. Once again, I'll note that transferring risk does not eliminate the risk. And as I mentioned on other presentations, there's an assumption that you're working on large projects within the test and the pen box. I'll point out a couple good websites that I find very helpful to deal with risk, and you go there and get a lot more information about them, and there's links here to those sites. The first one is actually the PMI Special Interest Group. It's called RiskSig. If you're involved in a lot of risk management, you might even consider wanting to join this Special Interest Group. There's the link there. The other one is a Department of Defense Acquisition University, the Defense Acquisition University. I actually referred people when I talked about cost management and EVM to this site as well, but they also have a very good risk community there. There's a lot of great information there. If you haven't visited this site for risk or for EVM, I highly recommend that you do that, and you can get a lot of valuable information, a lot of templates in that from this site. And then the last one is a organization. I'm not sure if it's a completely not-for-profit. I never did figure that out. But if you go to the link that I have here, this is actually a clickable flowchart to walk you through risk processes. Doesn't line up 100% with the PMBOK 6 processes, but it's very, very close. And I think you could, you know, as long as you go through that flowchart and you think about the PMBOK processes as you go through there, it's easily, you can easily see where the PMBOK processes would fit there. And you can click on each step of the process, and it will actually, you know, give you more information what you should be doing at those steps. And that's a very, very helpful tool, I think, as well. All right, with that, I think I'm done with my presentation, so I'll open it up for questions. I did forget at the very beginning of this, one question I wanted to ask the group is, you know, what does risk mean to some of the members? So I'd ask that question if anybody wants to answer that question. What does risk mean to you as a project manager?
Hey, David, it's Henry Wilson.
Okay. Go ahead, Henry.
Okay, yes. I wanted to say that I want to just give you a little story. How about that? I like to tell stories. When I was studying for the PMP test, I'm a self-study, so I studied for the PMP test on my own. I didn't take any classes for it or anything. And one of the things I knew I needed to do was to learn the PMBOK. So I started going through the PMBOK, and one of the things that caught my eye was the whole chapter on risk, the whole section on risk. That really caught my eye for some reason, and I really got glued to that, and I just kept reading that over and over again. And at the time, I was working in a project management office for a big telecom, and I don't know why, but I just got stuck on risk management, and I started reading through that chapter, and I was like, wow, I can apply all this stuff to what I'm working on here with this project. And it was a Y2K project, and I started asking around with the team members, you know, what the risks are, what are the risks that you have, you know, what kind of things could be possible issues on this project. And at first, the people on the project, they were like, what is this guy, crazy? You know, he comes in here from the project management office, and he starts asking us about risk, and he starts talking to us about, you know, what kind of risk there are on the project. What is he trying to get it, you know? What is he trying to open up a can of worms here or what? And I just kept after them. I kept telling them, look, you know, we've got to identify risk. And it took a good month, I think, of just saying this over and over again every time we had meetings. And then finally I started to have people calling me on the phone that would say, you know, I didn't want to say anything in a meeting, but, you know, there is this one thing that might come up, you know, in the future. There's a vendor we're working with, and they may not certify their stuff to be Y2K compliant. You know, we've been having an issue with them, and they say they might make the schedule, but they might not. And these things started coming up, and I was able to raise these issues ahead of time and start looking into them and come up with a mitigation plan for some of the items and go through some of the things that you just took us through with all the things that you just taught us. And it was exciting to me to be able to use what I had learned in the PMBOK, you know. I was thinking before about what Rita said about, you know, some of the tests that you take, the practice tests that you take prior to taking the PMP might have questions and things that you don't really need to learn to pass the PMP test. And David, as you know and as I know, we're still learning today. So even if you study something, I mean, I agree with Rita, it's efficient to try to study the things that are going to be on the test. But even if you study something that's not on the test, it's something that's going to help you in your job as a project manager. And I found that with risk management. I might have not have had that many risk questions on the test, or may have, I don't really remember,
But I know one thing for sure. I really started putting risk to work for me, risk management to work for me, and it was an exciting time during my PMP exam prep was to learn about risk. So it's, that is probably out of all the subjects in the PMBOK, the one that, or at least one of the few that really stands high on my list. So I was happy to hear about that topic tonight. And just for everybody on the call, I also want to mention that there is a possibility that we might have someone else presenting on risk in our July conference call for the Lesson Learned conference call. I'm trying to set that up with somebody to present on risk. He was somebody that mentioned to me that that's something that's always of interest to project managers. And I said to him, well, then how would you like to present on it? And I've been working with him, and it might be possible for him to do a presentation on risk in the July call as well. Thanks for the opportunity to talk.
Hi, it's Linda Wortman. And I wanted to say thank you, David, for a great presentation. And Henry, that was a great story. That was very helpful.
Thank you, Linda. You know, one of the things that I learned, too, from going to some of the seminars that I was at, too, is I don't know if any of you have ever heard of this. I wasn't able to listen. David, I have to confess, I was out listening to the whole presentation because I had somebody, I got an important telephone call in the middle. Well, I might have missed this, but I know one of the things that they talked to us about was using the sticky notes to identify risk. They recommended that you could go into a conference room with give everybody a bunch of sticky note pads and just on a whiteboard lay out, you know, what the when you were talking about the probability of the risk happening and the impact, you lay out on a big whiteboard or on a wall with some newsprint or something, you know, where probability of risk goes from, you know, from the floor up to the ceiling, and the impact, the you know, the amount of impact that it would have goes from right to left or left to right, and you draw a bunch of big lines there to separate that out, and then you ask people to write down their risks and write down their risks on their sticky notes and stick them up on the and I actually did that with one of these groups. I had them take the sticky notes and we put them up on the board. You know, this one's a high probability, but it's a low impact. This one's a very high probability, but it's a medium impact. This one's a low probability, but it's a very high impact. You know, and we stuck these sticky notes around, and that's kind of how we laid it out. And then we just took those all and put them in a spreadsheet. So I don't know whether you mentioned that, David, but that's another thing that I used as a tool. It's an inexpensive tool. It just costs you as much as a bunch of sticky note pads.
That's great.
It's Annette here again. I apologize to the others for jumping in with lots of questions. I'm a little bit confused on this whole idea of positive risk. Why do we would manage what are possible opportunities through a risk management process?
Just David, I'll try to answer that. I think what they're trying to point out here is there's some things that could have positive effects on your projects. Perhaps there's something that you can do to reduce your schedule, maybe from 100 days down to 80 days. Maybe if you buy a tool, a software tool or something, it might help you reduce your schedule. So I think the whole idea here is to try to identify these kind of things that can actually help your project or help you maybe reduce time, maybe reduce cost somehow, and, you know, identify these things and make decisions based on that. You know, not just, you know, leave it up to, you know, up in the air type of decision, but actually get something documented and say, you know, to management, you know, and if they decide not to spend the money, you've got documentation to show, well, you know, we could have reduced, you know, this by 20 days, you know, had you accepted our recommendation. So that's an example. I don't know if anybody else has any real life examples. I'd love to hear one.
Well, I think it's useful to think of a positive risk as an investment. That's essentially what an investment is. You're putting money at risk, but you expect a positive result, and that's often how investments are analyzed. So it's really kind of the reason I bring it up. It's kind of on a continuum. You know, there are bad things that can happen on one end and positive things on the other. But it's all a matter of assigning a degree of uncertainty and an expected outcome.
So how does a positive risk differ from maybe a possible scope change then? Right? Or does one become the other?
I think it's the same way that a negative risk or a threat affects change, and that's the whole point of trying to identify them. You know, a negative risk is going to, you know, perhaps affect your schedule, your cost, and, you know, lead to a scope change where, again, maybe you have to, you know, use change management to request a change because the risk occurred. And I think positive affects it exactly the same way. I don't think there's a difference in it. You know, I think part of it is that we're trying to change the attitude towards risk, you know, to think of from a positive standpoint, too. And as Henry mentioned, you know, too often when we ask people to identify risk, you know, the scariest risks are the ones that we don't identify. And sometimes I think people are hesitant to bring up risk because it's always perceived as negative or bad news. So I think we're also trying to change the culture within project management, you know, to think of risk, you know, on a more positive basis, you know, to identify them so you can take action. And I think it's all part of that wave a little bit, I think.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
David, this is Henry.
What?
Yes, I wanted to give an example. Let's think of an example where a positive risk can change the scope of a project. Let's say, for instance, that you're working with a small company that is funded by venture capital or something, and you know, they've gone out to try to find additional funding. A positive risk might be that company might come back and maybe because of the product that they're trying to sell or whatever, they might be going after, you know, let's say $10 million worth of funding, but a positive risk would be that they would get $50 million worth of funding. So let's say that you're developing a product as part of your project and your client or your stakeholder goes out and goes out to try to get this funding, and the positive risk occurs, and all of a sudden they have, instead of $10 million worth of funding, they have $50 million worth of funding. And whoever it is that's funding them says, I love your product, and I'm going to support you, and I think that, you know, you could really market this thing, you know, by expanding this product and adding this functionality or whatever, or adding this feature to it. Now all of a sudden your scope has increased because of a positive risk. So I hope that helps you to understand how a positive risk can affect a project, sometimes in a negative way. The opposite is true, too. Sometimes a negative risk can affect a project positively. If you want to, I can give you an example of that as well, but I think with a little bit of imagination, you probably could come up with a few yourself.
Thank you, Henry. Before we go much further, you know, Henry, I appreciate you mentioning earlier that we are looking for volunteers and suggestions for our July call, so I want to open it up to anybody out there right now. We can just, you know, continue our risk discussion a bit, but I did want to open that up to see if anybody's got an idea of what they'd like to see presented in July and perhaps do a presentation. So with that, I'll open it up. And since nobody's responding, I'm going to ask Shelley, are you online? Shelley?
Yes, David, I'm here.
Okay. I know you and I had talked earlier, and you had mentioned maybe a subject for something you might be interested in.
I was wondering if people would be interested in going over estimating. Do you think that would be of interest?
Absolutely. Yes.
I'll throw my vote in as a yes as well.
Okay. Do you want me to do estimating?
And does anybody else have any other alternatives to offer? Because I'm an opportunist, and I hear one opportunity, I'll gladly accept that.
Hi, Henry, it's Annette. I don't know about who could give it, but I'd be interested in hearing someone talk about the PM framework as a general overview as part of the exam prep.
All right, that's another really good example, framework overview. Do we have anybody that would like to volunteer for that subject? I also think that is a very, very good suggestion. It's one of the things that can very easily get lost in studying because you get so focused on the processes. Well, that's I'll tell you what we'll do for July. We'll go ahead and, since we do have somebody volunteering to do estimating, we'll put estimating on for July. We'll put framework down for August, and we'll see if we can get a volunteer for framework by August. Does that sound like a good plan? And I'll take lack of response to mean absolutely.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me, too.
Okay, that's going to be the plan. So, again, I'll open it up to any questions on risk or any other part of the PMP that anybody might have any questions on. And we're right at 10:15, which is the time that I said we would finish. We went a little bit longer the last two sessions, but if nobody else has any additional questions on that, we'll wrap it up. Give one more chance to anybody to jump in.
Thank you for such an entertaining session, Henry and David.
Yes, thank you both. I second that emotion.
That sure was a lot of helpful information on risk management, wasn't it? Please join us for a future conference call. We currently have several calls a month. Join our Yahoo group for more information about our calls and information to further your project management career. Membership is free. Details are at pmlessonslearn.com. We hope you'll continue to listen in to our podcasts and tell others about our podcasts and our group. pmlessonslearn.com. We're all about project managers helping project managers. And until next time, keep on learning.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project managers helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.